All right, good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Colorado Title Setting Board. Today is June 26, 2018. The time is 1:05, and we are meeting today on 5 rehearings. And this is the final meeting of the Title Board for the year. Well, the Title Board season. I guess we meet again in October.
But sadly, sorry, but just for the record, did you say June 26th?
Did I? I thought I said April. Okay, it's April 26th.
Anyways.
The first item on the agenda is a rehearing on compliance with federal immigration law. And the motion, I believe, was filed by Mr. Gruskin. But let me first just confirm if the proponents could come up and just identify yourselves for the record so we can make a record that you're both present.
Tom Tancredo is a proponent.
And Floyd Trujillo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Gruskin, is there anything you want to add to your motion for rehearing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Gruskin on behalf of the objector. Yes, there is, actually. On the jurisdictional arguments, I think that the first argument is particularly an important one. This is the notion of federal immigration law and enforcement or compliance therewith is not a subject. When you take a look at the provisions that are addressed in this measure, the first one deals with establishing this and enforcing this information exchange between state and local governments and the federal government. The second one is this prohibition on what is referred to in the measure as harboring a person whose immigration status is not lawful. Functionally, those two have nothing to do with one another. One is about a governmental obligation in terms of certain records that the governmental entity has and maintains and how it is obligated to transmit those records to the federal government, and the other is a prohibition on this so-called harboring, act of harboring. I would note that the statutes referred to in the measure pretty much make my point. In proposed section 24-33.5-2103, the subparagraph 1, subsection 1, deals, and it is entitled Compliance with Federal Immigration Law on Communications and Cooperation. And the two statutes listed there, the federal statutes listed there, are 8 U.S.C. section 1373 and 8 U.S.C. section 1644. Those two provisions are entitled Section 1373 is entitled Communication Between Government Agencies and the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Section 1644 is entitled Communication Between State and Local Government Agencies and the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Those have an ostensible relationship by their terms, by their provisions, by their titles. That is granted. But then subsection C relates to, and the exact wording of the initiative is that a jurisdiction shall not, in violation of 8 U.S.C. section 1324, encourage or facilitate the physical harboring of an illegal immigrant. That statute, 8 U.S.C. section 1324, is entitled Bringing in and Harboring Certain Aliens. There is absolutely no crossover between the prohibition, the act of what this measure calls physical harboring, and the maintenance of records as to an individual who may have records that are maintained by a state or local government as defined here. And I would remind the board that in 2016, the redistricting measure that was struck, the title for which was struck by the Supreme Court, One of the issues that the court looked at were the underlying provisions of law that were affected because of the change. I would argue that that analysis applies here because the underlying sources of federal law that are allegedly or as set forth in the measure supposed to be enforced here are unrelated. And you could envision the voter who may not have a problem with one of these prohibitions who would have a problem with the other prohibition. For instance, there may be people who don't have a problem with the prohibition on harboring who don't want their names to be part of an information exchange that is actively enforced at the state level. And so to the extent that that's true, we believe that our first jurisdictional argument is sufficient to allow the board to ask the proponents to recraft their measure and bring it back in due course. In addition, as we point out in the second argument, the way this is phrased and the suggestion that what this measure is doing is enforcing current law is wrong. It is just fundamentally wrong because rather than identify the INS, this measure extends to all federal immigration agencies. An undefined phrase, and to the extent that that is so, voters cannot know, does it apply to sub-agencies within Homeland Security? Does it apply to the Department of Defense? Does it apply to the Department of State, which issues visas? Does it apply to other agencies that may catalog data that relate to immigration status? There's no way they can know. So just like in the decision on Initiative 55 in 2006, by strategically not defining something, the proponents have ensured that voters cannot knowledgeably cast a vote because they have to choose between a phrase that they read and an unknown definition of that phrase that will definitely be in the eye of the beholder. And lastly, the third jurisdictional argument is one that I'm sure that you can appreciate without further discussion, just that the proponents have gone beyond their review and comment memo. I would assume, Madam Chair, that it's probably better to just address the jurisdictional arguments, and then to the extent that we actually need to, hopefully we won't, we can get into clear title and abstract. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this particular initiative? No, all right. And the proponents want to respond to that? You don't have to.
Thank you. As I understand the objection, I guess I would put it in language not all that legally, not really defined as legalese, but simply let's throw everything we can think of against the wall and see what sticks. That's what I heard pertaining to this. The fact is, of course, that I think all of this is fairly clear, is clear, not just fairly clear, but very clear. The DHS and INS are successor agencies, universally understood to be that in terms of to the INS. When we talk about what the law actually is, the federal law that we are trying to uphold here, it is the federal law doesn't distinguish between these jurisdictions. It is the law. What we distinguish is what the reporting requirements are. That's all. But the law is the law. And the law and the requirements of the federal law are broadly applied. Not necessarily an issue, I know, of sanctuary cities, because, of course, there are some, first of all, most cities do not, only cities, municipalities, are the ones that are arresting these people that we're talking about here. It's not, you know, the state of Colorado. It's not the University of Colorado. And so when we identify what we're trying to do and the law that we're trying to uphold, the federal law, it is a broad measure. It is true. But the reporting requirements are fairly restrictive, I think.
Thank you. Any discussion on single subject?
Yeah, I think I have a little confusion in terms of what's being described, because I look at the statute, the federal statute, 8 U.S. Code 1373. So first, the whole INS versus other agencies thing, I don't quite understand, because there's a subsection B1 that talks about, you know, barring or restricting a federal, state, or local government entity from sending information to or requesting it from the INS. But then below that, it also says exchanging such information with any other federal, state, or local government entity. So I don't know that the claim that sort of federal law is limited to the INS is quite an accurate statement. More generally, unlike the case cited at 55, I don't think the voters would be surprised here by the two measures. I mean, they seem to me to be tied to the same general purpose of helping the federal government essentially keep track of who's here and what their legal status is, and then, you know, do whatever they're going to do with that information thereafter. I mean, the harboring, let's know who people are, and the information is towards the same purpose. And I also don't think that voters would be surprised, for example, that an agency other than INS and a state agency might talk to, or a local agency might talk to each other about the immigration status of people. For example, I'm thinking of the State Department of Corrections and the Federal Bureau of Prisons, you know, might talk to each other about the status of a prisoner, determining, you know, what they might need to do with them under immigration laws. So for those reasons, I don't think that the arguments made thus far cause me any single subject concerns.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, we commonly have things that maybe voters would like one without the other, and as long as they're necessarily connected, it's not really a problem. We have a lot of initiatives that come through that, for instance, you know, require a department to make a report, and there's probably voters out there who think that's a waste of time and would never want that, but it's necessarily connected to the rest of it. If this was something that, you know, you must follow federal law and cooperate with respect to immigration, or with respect to everything, and you were wrapping in marijuana and all kinds of other things, then you might really have a disconnect problem and a large group of voters who want one and don't want the other. But I don't see this measure as coming anywhere close to that kind of disconnect.
I agree.
Okay. Want to make a motion?
The only question I have, in the motion for rehearing, there was another jurisdictional issue raised. I don't know if Mr. Gruskin's abandoned that since he didn't bring it up on the question.
No, I think he was waiting for us to do single subject and said he was
going
to
come.
I think
that
up.
Was, right? That's almost to me like a precursor to it. Maybe it's just out of order. I guess we can do single subject first and then do that one.
Yeah, let's do.
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 169 has a single subject and that we have jurisdiction to set a title.
You just need to deny the rehearing on that.
Oh, issue. Yeah. Sorry. I move that we deny the rehearing on the issue of single subject until it's late in the session.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Mr. Gruskin, that then, I guess we did it in reverse, but would take us to the other jurisdictional issue of review and comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't abandon the argument so much as just trying to synopsize it because I thought it was kind of self-evident, but just to be clear, the only measure that is on the website or in your packet is really the amended version. It appears labeled as a final as well, but there are underlined provisions or words or phrases. In the packet as well, you have the review and comment memo, and the proponents have added in their section 2433.5-2101-2B the reference to federal authorities. I don't see that addressed at all in the review and comment memo. And therefore, I think that as a function of that, they have gone beyond the memo.
Can I ask you a question? Have you seen the original submission?
The original of this measure?
Yes.
Yes.
So as I look at the original, it looks to me like it has the word federal, but misspelled. And so the amended version, I think, is just correcting that misspelling.
Right. And I
ordinarily would not consider that to be a significant or substantive change. Is there something else that I'm missing? No.
You're on target. And I'll withdraw the argument.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Which brings us to clear title.
Do we need a motion on that piece?
Not if it's
withdrawn. As for a hearing, yeah. Or just withdrawn? Okay.
The title is not sufficiently descriptive to the extent that it needs to be so that voters understand the scope of this measure. And I'll run through the arguments, but that is basically the rubric under which I would ask you to reconsider your title. Number one, it applies to lawful and unlawful citizenship, well, immigration status, and I believe citizenship, but it isn't clear, even to the extent that it's only immigration status. Clearly, this is going to be a mandate for an information base on people, whether or not they are, their immigration status is even suspect, so arguably everyone who is in the state of Colorado. Secondly, the notion of local government is insufficiently descriptive to know that, for instance, the measure also by its terms applies to districts. It is expressed as to certain districts. It is less so as to others, but the definition of jurisdiction applies to school district, special district, or any other district. And not all of them operate under the local government rubric. In any event, voters ought to know just how expansive the governmental obligation that they're imposing on each and every district in the state of Colorado is. That's basically arguments B and C in our motion. Argument D relates to the fact that there is any instrumentality of government that is also now going to be subject to this provision. That means that as an instrumentality, it is not a local government. It is not a state government. It is not a district. It is some other creature. And to the extent that that is unknowable, the voters ought to understand that it's unknowable. Argument E relates to higher ed, and to the extent that that is the case, state government is not a sufficient rubric under which to lump higher ed institutions. And finally, we believe that the fact that there are certain tests for which the findings in the measure will be triggered that are expressly delegated to the federal government ought to be set forth in the title. And we think short of making these changes, voters will not understand the central features of what is being presented to them for a vote. Thank you.
Any questions? All right. Did the proponents want to make any response? Okay.
Basically, we agree with the way the title was set originally, but commenting on the objections on 2B, the objection misstates the requirements of the initiative as reports are only required by municipal governments, not schools, universities, or any other legal entities. The second item objection is the 2C. The prohibitions against policies that obstruct federal immigration law enforcement do indeed apply to all jurisdictions, and there's nothing confusing or misleading about the language saying so. The third one is 2D, and this objection is basically without merit. Such items are well understood in Colorado law. The last one is, I believe it was 2E. The measure does indeed apply to all jurisdictional entities, but a government-created enterprise is free to litigate its application to them if it chooses to apply policies obstructing immigration law enforcement. But Other than that, I do believe that the way it's set, we agree with the title.
All right. Any discussion by the board on changes we want to make to the title?
So as to the, I would say for the most part, I'm okay with the title as we set it. There are a couple possible changes that we could consider to clarify. As to the first one, lawful or unlawful, I mean, the title as we set it says regarding the citizenship or immigration status. I think it's kind of assumed as part of that, that it would include that status, whatever it is, whether lawful or unlawful. But if we wanted to, I think we could include on line four after individual, whether lawful or unlawful. Again, I don't know that it's necessary, but if that would resolve the objection and if the proponents don't have an objection, I'd be okay with something like that.
Where? Right after individual?
Yeah.
You'd say whether lawful or unlawful?
Yeah, and I think the language looks to be basically mimicking the federal statute. So probably offset by commas. And again, I don't know that we would need this, but I think it would resolve the objection in 2A.
Proponents have any, or Mr. Gruskin, did you have a?
I would just ask whether or not placed there, does that phrase appear to modify an individual rather than the person's immigration status?
Maybe after immigration status would be a better place for that.
I think so.
Okay. Any response from the proponent? Any objection to putting that in? Okay. I'm fine with that.
I think when we set the title originally, we also considered putting in some description of local government or some of these qualifiers about agencies or instrumentalities and decided not to. This is another one where I think it's probably okay as it is, but I wouldn't be opposed to saying something about local government, you know, maybe on line three, and local government as defined in the measure, or maybe even highlighting a couple of things, but I don't think it's necessary. I don't know if you two have thoughts on that.
I mean, I can't think of the one specifically, but I think in general in the past, we have routinely set, when we talk about districts and locals and municipalities and towns and counties, we have put them all together in local government.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. And that's the conversation we had last time. And I think I actually proposed a little bit of additional language, and we chose to go the other way. I don't see any compelling reason to reverse that choice.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I agree with that. I'm fine with not making a change as to that. And I think that would, I mean, in my mind, that would resolve B through E. And then as to F, I would just note that although the objection claims that it delegates decision-making to the federal government by talking about the denial of federal grant money, I think that's referring to the part in proposed 24-33.5-2103, subsection 2, talking about a sanctuary jurisdiction. As we discussed last time, and I think the proponents agreed with this, that doesn't really do anything. So I don't think there's anything delegated to the federal government because that sanctuary jurisdiction policy has no effect that would have any, that would do anything practically to a state or local government. So I don't see a need to make a change based on that objection.
Yeah, I don't think there's any penalty included, and I think it'd be confusing to put anything in that tried to imply the federal government may do this or that. We don't know.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, to me, it doesn't read as really a delegation of power. It's more like this is what, you know, states have to do, and it's a sort of an acknowledgement of the evidence that they're not doing it.
Okay. All right, then do you want to make a motion to just adopt the one change shown on the screen?
Sure. I would move that we grant the motion for rehearing only to the extent that we've made a minor amendment to the title as it now appears on the screen and set that as the title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that takes us to the abstract. Mr. Griskin, you want to?
Madam Chair, the objection here is that there are impacts acknowledged as likely to occur, but there's no fiscal impact. The entire point of the abstract is to include in the petition a document so that potential signers could know whether or not they are increasing or decreasing the cost of government and whether or not they are therefore increasing or decreasing their own tax burdens potentially. To the extent that this is set forth as something that is likely to occur and that the workload and the costs will do so, well, there should be some sort of estimate or some sort of assessment of fiscal impacts as opposed to simply a statement that they have not been estimated. I can't give you a number because it's kind of not what I do for a living, but there are budgetary people who do this as a matter of routine for the legislature, and at bare minimum, to the extent that the fiscal impacts are not discernible, the abstract ought to state that. So we would ask that the abstract be revised to reflect either that the fiscal impacts are unknowable or that there is a credible number that can be affixed to them. Thank you.
Any response from the proponents?
In terms of costs, we must recall that this language was actually the language of a Senate bill, just simply brought over here for the most part. I mean, there's been some minor changes, of course, as the process has gone on. But in that bill, there was, that was the finding that, indeed, additional workload by state agencies is minimal, and that such minimal additional work is routinely absorbed annually in implementing hundreds of new state laws. I mean, there has to be something relatively significant in order, it seems to me, in order to have the fiscal note applied that would identify something more than what is stated in here. And otherwise, we're just fine with the way it's written.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I'll start this one off. I think that we can amend the abstract slightly to be a little more clear, and the reason why is on page 2 of the fiscal impact statement, as opposed to the abstract, at the end of the first paragraph continuing from page 1, it says, these costs and workload increases can be accomplished within existing appropriations to affected state agencies. So I think what's being said in the impact statement and probably could better be reflected in the abstract is that there is a sort of a little bit of an impact to the state, but we can absorb it, so we're not going to have to actually spend any more money on it. So I think that we'd say something like the sentence is in the abstract now, and then add something like, you know, however the state can accomplish these, you know, well, or we could just track the language, add the sentence from the impact statement and saying, but these, you know, costs and workload increases can be absorbed by the state within existing appropriations, and the state will not be required to spend additional money or something like that. Because I think the way it reads now, it says, all right, we don't have a number, but this is going to cost us something. And what's really sort of being said is, well, it might cost us a little something, but we're going to take that cost out of other things we're doing in our existing budget, so it's not really going to cost us anything.
Okay. I just have one question for Legislative Council. Is this the same? This bill went through, right? Or is going through? No, it never went through the.
Went through the Senate.
Yeah, but there was a fiscal impact statement prepared, I guess, is my point, on a bill like this, right?
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, Natalie Mullis with Legislative Council staff. Yes, there was a fiscal note prepared for a bill that is, for all intents and purposes, the same measure. And the fiscal note was identical.
Okay.
Except for some administrative differences, like we don't talk about appropriations in notes for initiative process.
Okay. All right. That's all. Go ahead.
So is it your belief that we should not add the language here that I was suggesting?
Thank you. Actually, I just wanted to say that I'm totally comfortable with that language.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to, because the standard is that these are supposed to mirror the kind of process, I think it's important for the record to say that, you know, part of the reason we're not making changes is this is the same note that went through under the same standards already. So, but I think that it went through with that same language that we're thinking of adding, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the fiscal note for the legislative bill does not have an abstract.
Right.
So
it would actually be using the language that went through the fiscal process.
Okay. Can I ask also on page 2 at the end? So I think we've been talking about the state expenditure piece. As to the local government piece, there isn't language like that about whether it can be accomplished within existing appropriations. And I assume that maybe because that's not something that's as easy to determine for Legislative Council.
Yeah, that is correct. It is more difficult to determine. We did send the language to local government representatives. We got something back from Colorado Counties Incorporated, which was basically indeterminate. And I think part of it is that some of the things that could cause costs for local governments as a result of this is like similar to what was going on with initiative number 4, the housing measure, and that it really is dependent on future events that we can't anticipate.
Okay, and I guess that kind of ties to my last question, which that second paragraph under the local government section that talks about if local governments are not currently complying, this measure could increase workload and costs. And then it has this language that I think the objector points to. These impacts have not been estimated. Could you just let us know why those impacts have not been estimated?
The reason they weren't estimated is because of what I just explained, that some of the things are not, the things that could cause costs are not something that we can anticipate. I would be fine if you wanted to amend that to say that it's indeterminate rather than not estimated.
Okay. That's all. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. So what kind of changes we want to make?
I think on the state expenditures line, we just add a sentence and basically, Steve, it's just that sentence. So. May add a couple of words after.
So Jason, when you were talking about a sentence, I think you used the word absorbed instead of accomplished. And I do think there's something odd about talking about accomplishing costs and workload increases. I don't know if absorbed is necessarily the right word, but I kind of like the feel of that better than accomplished.
Okay. Well, I think would it really? Yeah, I think that's fine. Do we think it's sufficient, or do we want something like, and therefore will not, you know, require additional spending by the state or something like that?
Or maybe just without requiring additional expenditure?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Maybe
at the end.
At the end of the sentence.
Yeah. I would say without requiring additional state spending. And then on the local government, I think Ms. Mullis has thought that it would make sense to say it's indeterminate rather than has not been estimated, I think is a good change.
So on that last sentence?
Like just the amount of these impacts is cannot be determined. Or is indeterminate. I think cannot be determined is better for regular people to read. I think I'm good with all that.
All right. I think just for clarity, I'll read just the paragraphs we changed. Under state expenditures, it says the measure increases cost and workload for state agencies to make the required notifications and to prepare annual reports. And then we added the cost and workload increases can be absorbed within existing appropriations to the affected state agencies without requiring additional spending. And then down in local government, we changed paragraph 2, which now reads to the extent that local government entities are not currently complying with federal immigration policy, the measure may also increase workload and cost to do so. The amount of these impacts cannot be determined. Did you have something, Mr. Grusian?
Just a suggestion. To the extent that you want to work a parallelism, under state expenditures, the sentence that pre-existed your change related to costs and workload, and you led that sentence with the cost and workload increases rather than the impacts. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I guess I would just use that same phrase in as to the local government, where it says to the extent that local government entities are not currently complying with federal law, the measure may also increase workload and costs to do so. So I would say the cost and workload increases, these costs and workload increases cannot be determined.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Ready for a motion then?
Yep.
All right, I would move that we adopt the amended fiscal abstract as it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. And then I guess we don't need to do anything else overall.
So this will be marked as motion for rehearing granted only to the extent that the board made changes to the titles and the fiscal impact abstract.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's concludes 169, and that takes us to proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 178, regulation of oil and gas development. Mr. Ramey.
There's no title book hearing to this. If he wants to take it to the Supreme Court, that's the next step.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Afternoon.
Madam Chair, if it's okay with you and the members of the board, what I'd like to do mostly, I think, to save time.
No. Really? Are you sure? I mean, it's the last meeting. You don't want to drag it out?
No, I don't want
to. You want to put them all together?
I can remember days when the last meeting would go deep into the night and then on into the next day and that night. And I'm amazed that we have five measures and four of them are me.
It's a wonderful thing.
I'm almost apologetic for this.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is actually, I think it would make more sense, not only in terms of time, but the discussion, talk about all four measures together. The titles that have been set for the four measures, 178, 179, 180, and 181, are virtually identical. In fact, I think they are identical, if I read them correctly, though the measures themselves differ in format to some extent. And I'd also like to fold in the discussion of the single subject issue and the clear and fair title issue, because they're sort of uniquely tied together here. Now, I understand the board will likely address single subject first in its deliberations, and then either it will end there or the board will decide there is a single subject and we'll go on.
Ed, I don't want to interrupt you midstream. Do we have both designated representatives in the room right now?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just didn't see. John's hiding over there. That's nice.
I didn't even think about asking. That would have been an easy end of this hearing. We'd be gone. Darn. Thank you. But I'd like to kind of do the discussion in one piece because I think it will make more sense. From the single subject aspect.
Do you have any objection to that, Mr. Dunn, or did you want to do them all separate?
He will respond to whatever I say in whatever order he wants, so that will not be a problem. One reason I want to do this, in terms of the single subject, this is not, as we discussed with another measure not long ago, this is not a log-rolling Christmas tree situation. This is more the other aspect of single subject, which raises the question of whether there's something coiled up in the folds. That is not apparent on a first reading of the measures or any reading of the measures necessarily. That does not find its way into the title, therefore, and might be of surprise to the voters. And of course, the question in the event of such ambiguity or lack of clarity is really twofold. One, why isn't it clearly expressed in the title, or is it clearly expressed in the title? And secondly, is part of the problem that it really is a separate subject, in which case, you know, we have that issue first. And by the way, I should say that I am appearing on behalf of the objector, Jeanette Rose. I'm not just coming in on my own today. Let me focus, if I may, on 178 and the text of 178 to begin with. And the main points that appear in 178 are reflected through all the measures with one exception. I'd submit to begin with that 178 and 180 contain three subjects. One having to do with the affirmation, as is expressed, of local regulatory authority. Second having to do with parameters placed upon fees that may be charged by local governments and regulatory authorities. And third, the restriction on state and local government regulatory restrictions pertinent to oil and gas development. Numbers 179 and 181 do not contain the provision regarding fees. So we're talking, in my parlance at any rate, two subjects with regard to 179 and 181, three subjects with regard to 178 and 180. Looking at the measure, let me preview the overall problem here, and I'm going to walk very quickly through our concerns with the measures. These measures read as if they are, the effect of these measures is somewhere along the line of affirming or enshrining current status of the law, perhaps restricting it from becoming arbitrary and capricious or doing something unreasonable in the future, perhaps even expanding regulatory authority, but fairly benign in terms of the effect that these measures would have on regulatory authority. In fact, what I'm going to suggest to the board is that the effect is very much the opposite of that. It is constrictive of regulatory authority and fencing in of regulatory authority in virtually every respect. And this is a new proposed constitutional amendment, which would therefore, by the normal treatment of such measures, would trump or by virtue of its recency and more specificity would take precedence over existing constitutional measures and interpretive law, such as Article 20, Section 6, and the sort of home rule limitations and mixed state and local concern issues that have been developed over the last few years with regard to those measures. Number one, and I'll use number 178 as a template, but this is reflected through all the measures in somewhat different format. The measure would affirm local governments, and now only local governments, authority to regulate certain surface aspects of oil and natural gas development. Only certain surface aspects, nothing more. So to the extent there are other types of regulatory measures that address things other than certain surface aspects, they are not affirmed, and I would submit that by expressly not being affirmed or through a declination of affirmance, they're virtually disaffirmed. So there is a fencing in and narrowing in that first provision with regard to local government authority to certain surface aspects, whatever that may mean, and I won't attempt to predict or define it. Mr. Dunn may do that, but it certainly is not everything. There's a lot of oil and gas regulation that goes beyond certain surface aspects. The second aspect of number 178 is the provision regarding fees, and this appears in 180 as well. And so we somewhat shifted off of a message here, and now we're talking about restrictions upon the parameters of fees that may be charged in the local oil and gas regulatory context, but nevertheless fees in the face of nothing that I'm aware of that the state requires in terms of state or local concern issues, though there is a developed understanding of what a fee must consist of and when a fee goes too far and may turn into something else, such as an exactment or taking or perhaps a tax in certain situations. This overrules and changes that to some extent. Again, that's only in two of the measures, but we would submit amounts to an additional subject. Third, and interestingly, we get down to the last topic of 178, and it's the last topic of all the measures. We now have restrictions and limitations and fencing in placed upon the regulatory authority of both state and local governments, not just local anymore. Now we've moved to the state level as well, regarding various things that go far beyond certain surface aspects, such as addressed in the first part of the measure. So we have a restrictive provision down there that applies to both state and local government. We have essentially a limited affirmation of local government jurisdiction over a very limited aspect. I wouldn't say very limited, a limited, because I don't know. I wouldn't try to measure the surface versus subterranean pieces of it with regard to the other provision. Then we have the fee measure in there as well. Suggest we really do have three separate subjects in two of the measures and two in the others. Now, whether or not whether or not the board would agree with me on that, we clearly don't have these issues expressed fairly and adequately, I would submit, in the titles. And if we look at the titles, I'll just turn again to the title of 178, and all the titles for all these measures do read identically. And let me preface the statement about the titles as follows. They're in the Hayes case back in 2016, and for the life of me, I can give you a cite, but I cannot recall the subject matter of the case, but it was an opinion by Justice Gabriel, where even in the context of finding a single subject in the face of some animated discussion about that, nevertheless found that the title did not fairly and adequately express the true meaning and intent of the measures because of leaving something out or failing to point out an indisputable consequence of the measure that it was not clear upon the face either of the measure or the title which parroted the measure. And the justice in the court cited an old case from 1994, In Re Obscenity, which is a case I do remember, which probably illustrated the concept as well as any that I've ever seen. An initiative was proposed that addressed the protections, the legal protections available to speech that could be characterized as obscenity under Colorado law. And what the measure said by its language was that obscenity would be protected in Colorado to the full extent required by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. When one hears that at first brush, that sounds pretty good. And if you're an ACLU operative and junkie such as I am, it sounds okay. Reading a little deeper, and the court pointed this out, and in fact the proponents acknowledged it, the intent was to constrict and reduce the protections for speech that could be characterized as obscenity. And it was doing so through the recognition that Colorado provided broader protections under, I believe it's Article 2, Section 10, the free speech protections of the Colorado Constitution. So it was eliminating those extra state constitutional protections and confining it to the relatively or more limited protections of the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court at that time, and again cited just a couple years ago, said, you can't do that. Even though that's the language of the measure, and you're representing that language accurately in the title, word for word, literally, that doesn't work because the voters will be misled as to the effect of the measure. And I would submit the titles here partly because of this coiled up into folds multiple subject issue, but even without going there, do not, the titles and the measure itself make it sound like the regulatory authority is not being constricted. In fact, it's being affirmed when in fact it is being significantly restricted, thus misleading the voters. And when if we get to the titles, I like to say if we get by the single subject issue and we are discussing the titles, we can certainly engage with the board about how that might be fixed. But I would just point out initially looking at, we have the 178 title on the board right now. If you go to the language after the all important and in connection therewith phrase, we see two things. We see that it affirming the authority of local governments to regulate certain aspects of such development, so long as it doesn't conflict with state authority, with no indication that it is only affirming the local government authority as to that aspect, to that narrow or at least somewhat confined aspect of oil and gas regulation. It suggests that it, if you read the title and the measure for that matter, it, which the title reflects, it sounds like a broader and reads like a broader affirmation of local government regulatory authority in the area of oil and gas regulation. And manifestly with the limited language in there, even though the limited language appears in the title, it is not clear that in fact this is a constrictive as opposed to a protective or affirming measure. Secondly, if you go down to to the language right after, so long as the regulation does not conflict with state law, which is the law anyway under the current reading of mixed state and local interests. It then says that the measure also cannot unreasonably restrict a property owner's access to owner's surface or mineral property interests, et cetera, and continue that phrase continuing as if it were part of the restriction or affirmation or limitation upon the affirmation of local regulatory rights. And in fact, it's not. It's a totally different, I would suggest, subject. It extends to the state, which is not mentioned down there. It's mentioned up in the lead-in paragraph, but with no nexus to the language right there, where state regulatory authority is being directly limited as well. And in fact, conflates what I would call the first and the third subjects of this measure. The limited affirmation and therefore disaffirmation of everything else in the first provision as to local authority, and then the double restrictions that are applicable to both state and local regulatory authority that appear in the third paragraph. And finally, in the two measures that address the parameters for fees, they're totally absent from any of the titles. They don't appear in either of the relevant titles or any reference to that at all. Now, it may be because I wasn't here, but maybe the board thought that was just an minor aspect of the measure and didn't need to be repeated in the titles. Well, it's important enough to consume approximately a third of the text of the two measures in which they appear. I think it's important, and I would suggest that language should appear in the titles as well, or some reference to that. So I think we're facing titles that do not, first off, they're not inclusive or accurately reflecting even the language of the measures. Second, by reflecting the language they do, they create an impression, an interpretation that is very different from the actual effect that these measures will have. These measures will fence in and constrict, and maybe that's good policy. I don't mean to argue policy here, but they will fence in and constrict regulatory authority. And it sounds like, at most, they're not doing very much versus regulatory authority, and in fact, nothing whatsoever at the state level. And again, I was just, that's the result of two things. One is the title doesn't really accurately reflect what the measures do, even if the titles trace the language and adopt the language, taking us back to sort of the obscenity and Hayes cases. But secondly, I would submit to the board that part of this is what happens when a subject gets coiled up in the folds. That's why that leg of the single subject concern and problem exists. So I'll stop with that, and I would like an opportunity. Obviously, if we're done with single subject level, we can all go home. If not, and if we're back struggling with the titles, I can certainly weigh into that. But I would ardently submit to the board that these titles don't get us there and are very misrepresentative of what these measures actually do by falling into exactly the trap that the measures are designed to create by following specific language. Thank you.
Mr. Dunn.
Good afternoon. Jason Dunn on behalf of proponents Guillermo de Herrera and John Brackney, who for the record are here. So I disagree with Mr. Ramey's interpretation of the measure, but regardless of whether you follow his interpretation or our interpretation, what I didn't hear in what he said was that even under his interpretation, why those aspects of the measure constitute separate subjects that are not connected properly for purposes of single subject jurisprudence. Whether the measure affirms or limits state and local government rights over oil and gas development, whether it imposes restrictions on the fees that can be imposed by local governments in the context of such development, are necessarily connected for purposes of this body's analysis. I think back to, with regard to his first argument, I think back to number 97, which I think was the same board, that was the setback measure, where actually in opposition, we argued that it was changing the home rule framework of Colorado by allowing county governments and the state to impose setback requirements on home rule jurisdictions, and this body rejected that argument, and the court affirmed that. The same, I suppose, would apply here now, that if that may be the effect, although I don't agree with that, but regardless, for single subject purposes, that wouldn't necessarily create a separate subject. So with regard to his specific interpretation of the provisions, I disagree that there's any constriction on local government ability to regulate surface aspects of oil and gas development. All the measure does, and it says it plainly in the language, that the measure affirms that local governments have the authority to regulate certain surface aspects of oil and gas development to protect the public health, safety, and welfare and environment, so long as they do not conflict with state or local law. That's simply affirming what the state of the law is now. With regard to the argument that by using the language certain aspects, it somehow, I'm sure there's a Latin phrase I should remember from law school, that the inclusion of one, exclusion of the other. But that is not intended and does not exclude any other aspects. As you all know, local governments have the ability to regulate certain aspects of oil and gas development, not all aspects. The Colorado Supreme Court made that clear in the Longmont and Fort Collins cases that were cited in the motion for rehearing. So all that does is affirm that whatever those aspects are, they're affirmed in this measure as their ability to regulate those. Mr. Gallagher?
Yes, let's talk briefly about those cases, though. As I understood it, what they said was it was a mixed matter, that fracking specifically, which, as I understand, largely takes place under the surface, it was a matter of mixed state and local concern, but that there was, you couldn't do in sort of an absolute ban on it because it was sort of heavily regulated and there was a preemption issue there, but the cases do seem to suggest that there is some level of authority for local governments to regulate oil and gas production under the ground. As I understand it, the existing state of things is that there's not very much, but do you believe there is some or none? And if so, why have you limited this affirmation to surface in the initiative?
So I will say first that I'm not an oil and gas lawyer, but I think your reading is generally correct. The court said that while there are certain aspects around the certain surface aspects around oil and gas development that local governments can regulate, I'm talking about roadways, I even have a list, traffic, they can impose impact fees, require building permits, those kinds of things that are typical local government regulations they can impose. But in terms of the actual fracking, you're correct. The local government cannot or is very limited in regulating that activity. And all this measure does is simply affirm that relationship in the first provision. So with regard to the fees, again, Mr. Ramey argued that the measure imposes some sort of new standard for fees and cites a few of the cases that primarily relate to what constitutes a fee or when a charge is a fee or a tax, which Ms. Stayert and I know all too well from other unrelated cases.
But don't agree on.
That's right. But I think what Mr. Ramey is doing is confusing the when a fee can be imposed, and under this measure, when it's fair and reasonable, versus what is a fee, i.e., when is a fee actually a valid fee, or for example, when is it a tax? The measure doesn't override existing law. It simply says that any fees imposed by the local government need to be fair and reasonable. And then on his third subject, he contends that the measure imposes new restrictions on access to surface and mineral rights, and says that they that the statement that they may not unreasonably restrict such access is somehow not only a new law, but also a separate subject. And I thought, well, so there's a doctrine entitled reasonable use, which I'll quote a case from you I think will rebut what he's saying. It's Gurdy Oil and Gas v. Magnus, which is 946 P. 2nd 913 from the Colorado Supreme Court. And it says, the owner of a severed mineral estate or lessee is privileged to access the surface and use that portion of the surface estate that is reasonably necessary to develop the severed mineral interest. So if the mineral interest owner or lessee is entitled to make, or they are entitled to make reasonable use of the surface, it would follow then that the surface owner can't unreasonably restrict the surface use. And that's all this measure does, is affirm that principle of law, which has already been either established or confirmed by the Colorado Supreme Court. So we would argue that that not only is his interpretation of the specific provisions of the measure incorrect, and therefore don't constitute separate subjects, but even if that interpretation is correct, they still nonetheless don't constitute separate subjects. So I will pause there before addressing any title issues and see if you have any questions.
No. All right. I'm going to do single subject first.
Sure. Yeah, I think I'm more persuaded by our decision last time and by proponents' arguments today. I think I would deny the motion to rehearing to the extent it alleges that the measure has multiple subjects. I think that everything in here is related to the scope of state and local governmental authority to regulate oil and gas development. And as I understand it, right now, local government authority under land use, police regulations, these things, is maybe not entirely limited to surface regulation, but pretty close to that. So I think it's pretty speculative as to, well, one, we're not really supposed to consider effects anyways, but I'm not sure to what extent that even if we assumed that an affirmation would be interpreted as excluding what's not affirmed, which I have doubts that that would be the case. I don't know that it's changing much regardless. So for those reasons, I would deny the motion for rehearing on this ground.
I think that was well said, and I would agree with Jason.
Do you want to second it? Or was that was actually a motion, wasn't it?
Not quite.
Okay,
but
then go ahead.
I move that we deny the motion for rehearing to the extent that alleges that the measure contains multiple subjects.
Pausing just for a second. Do you want us to do these one at a time?
No, just the general single subject issue.
And as to all four rehearing motions? Right. Was that your motion as to all four measures?
Sure, then, and that applies to 178, 79, 80, and 81.
And I'll second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I'm going to mess up Steve's times.
I'll figure it out.
Okay. All right, that takes us to the title.
Preliminarily, I do think we did miss something there on the state and local government on the last piece on 178. And is that in all four? Is it just?
I think it is in all four.
That one's in all four. It's the fees that are all in two.
Right.
So I do think we need to do something about that. Otherwise, I guess I listen to any discussion if people have thoughts on whether we're comfortable with affirming or not from either the board or proponents or opponents.
Jason Dunn, on behalf of proponents, we're fine with affirming. We think that's what the measure does, and we think that's an accurate description for voters as to what the intent is.
Mr. Ramey.
Be a little less repetitive, or try to be at this point. I think there are three things that would have to be done to the title, and not in any particular order of importance. Number one, I think Mr. Gallander identified one of them, the extension of the kind of second or third prohibition, depending upon what measure you're in, to the state government needs to be reflected. And there's kind of a run-on sentence with commas there, which would need to be broken up. And we would, the first part of it applies to the limited affirmation of local government regulatory power, and then the rest of it is both state and local. And you all can probably write that better than I can. I may gripe about what you write, but nevertheless, I think that needs to be reflected. Number two, I do think you need to reflect clearly that there is a restriction upon that which is being affirmed in the local government context, sort of the first issue that I raised. And it may or may not be true that today the courts have recognized limited, though some perhaps non-surface regulatory power that will rest with the local governments, as long as it doesn't conflict with something that the state has said. I don't know. I'm not an oil and gas lawyer any more than Mr. Dunn is, so both of us are probably the last people you want to listen to about that. But whatever exists today, something else could exist tomorrow, and this is going to be a new and preemptive constitutional measure if it gets adopted. Again, would be the latest and most specific. So I think it clearly needs to reflect what it does. And if the measure wasn't intended to do something, it wouldn't have had that limited language in there. The language has, words have to be given effect, and I think the courts have said that many times. So, I mean, that needs to be reflected in the title, because there will be some implication of that, however small or large. Third, and I go back to the fees, whatever, we can argue the fee issues forever. It was important enough to the proponents to put in this measure at some length. It's important enough to be put in the title so that the voters know that they are voting upon that. And again, I'm not arguing the policy one way or the other on that. It's an integral part of this measure. It belongs in there. It can't just simply be ignored in the two measures where it appears.
So is there something that you would suggest? Maybe it's because it's the last title board meeting, but I'm not sure I followed your first argument as to what is missing with respect to what you're saying as far as a restriction on local government.
On the affirmation piece?
Yeah.
The affirmation is limited exclusively to certain surface aspects. And that's the language I'm getting out of the title, and it comes out of the measures.
Right.
And certain surface. So that's the exclusive, that is exclusively what is being affirmed. I think that needs to be stated, because there is more to oil and gas regulation than just certain surface aspects, whatever that may be.
That may be true, but I don't think that we generally, when we're describing what a measure does, I don't think we generally would say, and here's some things that it doesn't do. And I'm not sure how we'd do that. Affirming the authority to regulate certain surface aspects, but not affirming anything else?
See, that, well, I mean, and that goes into where I sort of kind of roll back into the argument about the Hayes and obscenity cases, is you track the language perfectly. The board has tracked the language. Exactly. What I'm saying is that the language, in addition to containing this affirmation, which is nice, I guess, also by declining to affirm whatever else may be there, large or small, is explicitly not affirming that. Now, I don't really care, and I'm not competent to speak about whether it's large or small and whether it will stay large or small. but it should be reflected in the title that this is a limited affirmation. Those words, certain surface aspects, are not just throw-ins. That is a phrase of limitation, and it should in somehow in the title be identified as such. And it, maybe a simple word or two would do it. I don't think it requires sentences of explanation. Matter of fact, that would probably be the wrong way to go. But it requires some suggestion to the voters that that's a limiting phrase. They're not affirming local government regulatory authority. They're affirming this piece of it.
And I think my challenge with that is we're saying that. I mean, we're saying affirming the authority of local governments to do what? To regulate these things, which says not other things. And the problem, the challenge I'm having is, you know, we're not supposed to speculate too far to effects. And occasionally we do speculate a little bit when they seem very direct and clear. And to me, I don't know that I can clearly in my mind make the legal leap and say, hey, this measure, by saying we're affirming, which is essentially a legislative declaration, even though there's a separate purpose and findings above it, this authority in one area that we're necessarily saying, well, you don't have any other area. I suppose, case that was directly on point that said this is what this does every single time, then I might be more comfortable. I think we're really speculating a lot to try to say that.
I wouldn't quibble with you, Mr. Gallagher, on the point that I do not think the board needs to or should attempt to be explanatory about that limitation. But I do think a title needs to note, and it can do it extremely briefly, needs to note that this is a limited regulatory affirmation, and I don't think just reciting the language of certain surface aspects does it. I don't think that communicates to the voters adequately. And I really can't say much more than that. I'll guarantee you there's some case out there that I'm completely unaware of that probably discusses this, and heaven knows what way it comes out. But there's something more that needs to be there so the voters know, okay, there's something else. It may be very small, and I may not care about it at all. But there's, and of course, that may change depending upon future legal developments. But there's something else out there which is not being affirmed. I need to know that. I'll just go in circles with you, Mr. Gallagher, if I keep saying that. So I'll stop at that point. I think that's an important point.
Do you have anything?
Well, maybe I should know when to keep my mouth shut. But I'm a lawyer, so why pass up an opportunity to speak? I think there's a difference between a limited affirmation, which is what Mr. Ramey is contending it is, and affirming something that is limited. Local governments have a limited right to regulate oil and gas development. This measure simply affirms whatever that right is. It's a complete affirmation. It just happens to be of something that happens to be limited. It is not a limited affirmation in that it's only affirming part of something, but not other parts.
So to be clear, it's your statement is that the measure affirms all of the authority that local governments currently have.
With regard to the regulation
of oil and gas.
Of the aspects of oil and gas development that they can currently regulate.
Okay. So therefore, since the words certain, this to me is helping Mr. Ramey far more than it's hurting him.
That's what I should have.
because
I hope you're referring to your amendments, not mine.
Because if you're saying that this is everything, then what the implication is that we're going to constitutionalize the fact that everything, the full scope of local government authority to regulate this, is limited to certain surface aspects. And since neither of you are oil and gas lawyers. I'm not 100% sure that that's actually true, which is which gives me pause that maybe there is more change here than is obvious on the surface of the matter.
Well, I'm not sure I follow that. So I think we all can agree, including Mr. Ramey, that local governments can regulate some aspects of oil and gas development and not others.
Right.
Okay, so whatever those are that it can regulate, this affirms that.
Then why is it so? But what you're saying then is that there's nothing that's not on the surface that they can regulate, because otherwise that's not what it says.
Say that again. I think that was like a triple negative, so it lost me a little bit.
Okay. The measure says the authority for local governments to regulate certain sorry, that's below, but okay. Hereby affirm that local governments have the authority to regulate certain surface aspects of oil and natural gas development. So if that's intended to reflect all of their authority, then it's limited to the surface. If they currently have some authority underground, and my understanding is if they do, it's not much, but I don't know because I'm not an oil and gas lawyer either, then we're making a change.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. So the subject of the statement, right, is the surface aspects of oil and gas development. And it's saying there are certain aspects of that that local governments are allowed to regulate. That is the current state of the law. This measure affirms that. It doesn't. Isn't exclusive of any other rights they have. It doesn't disavow any other rights that they may or may not have. It simply says, in the context of the regulation of the surface aspects of oil and gas development, local governments can regulate certain parts of that, and this affirms that.
Okay.
It's so simply agnostic to.
That's the question I'm asking. The way you communicated before, it wasn't clear to me that the intent. So the measure says nothing about what local governments can do with oil and gas development underground.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So. Maybe just to talk about that piece of it, I don't see any need to make the change to the first of 3 3/4 lines of the title that we set with respect to the affirmance piece about certain surface aspects. And I read the obscenity case that the objector cited, and I think it's distinguishable in a meaningful way. And I think that reading the language here, I don't think that it either expressly or implicitly makes another change. It just doesn't say anything about authority to regulate other than the certain surface aspects that are talked about here.
Okay. So then should we move on and make the state change down below?
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess just before we did that, did we want to stick with where we were on the fees then, where we feel that the fees are just...
I still do, but I'm open to over-explaining, I guess. But I just...
Yeah, I don't have an objection to saying something about fees, but I don't know that I feel it's necessary to include in the title.
Okay. Yeah, I think we don't have to do that either.
Okay. You want to make your...
Well, I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Oh. So. You want to take a break? or do you want to?
No, I think we can do it pretty quickly, but I just need a minute. And if someone gets there before me, feel free to jump in, please.
But it could be right there instead of a comma.
Semicolon.
Or maybe even and. We may just have two,
right.
Two yes, pieces. And. You know, something like, and providing that state and local governments shall not.
Yeah, I think I'd make it a little shorter and just saying prohibiting state and local governments from unreasonably restricting.
I think that's fine.
Okay.
And we'll have to tweak it a little down below as well. But.
Do you have something, Mr. Dunn? Or just hanging out?
I was going to suggest.
Okay.
And then I think below, we take the comma on line 6, take the comma out after property and saying, or imposing.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me read it since we're going to keep doing it over and over. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the scope of state and local governmental authority to regulate oil and natural gas development, and in connection therewith, affirming the authority of local governments to regulate certain surface aspects of such development so long as the regulation does not conflict with state law, and prohibiting state and local governments from unreasonably restricting a property owner's access to the owner's surface or mineral property, or imposing technically or economically unfeasible conditions on access or development.
I move that we deny the motion for rehearing except to the extent that we've changed the title as it now appears on the screen, and this is for number 178.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Let's go to 179. Next, we've already done the single subject, so.
I think we could probably do the same thing on all four of these.
Right.
Yes.
Is it the exact same language or?
Yeah, I think we could copy the exact same language.
Yeah, because the fees were the only difference and we didn't talk about the
fees.
We
didn't put it in. Okay. Then you want to just make a motion on 178? I guess we can just do them all together then, huh?
Yeah.
You want to just do 179, 180, 181?
Sure.
Okay.
We have to see them. So we just say motion to just make them the same as 178.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's good.
All right. I would move that we deny the motions for rehearing on proposed initiatives 2017-18, number 179, 180, and 181, except to the extent that we've amended the titles for all three so that they are identical to the title for 178 as we've just said it.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, that concludes our agenda, and the time is 2:35. We're adjourned.